So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Advocacy United or its guests and do not reflect the views of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
And guess where this additional billion gallons of biofuel is going to come from? It's going to come from abroad. That's not an American First energy policy. We're in this together. Labor's in this. Building trades are in this. Refiners are in this. American consumers need us to do this too.
Now across the Jacob Media Network, welcome to the Labor and Energy Show Special, exclusively presented by the PBF Energy Paulsboro Refinery and the PBF Delaware City Refinery, in collaboration with the labor unions that build our communities.
If you fix this RINs issue, you're looking at a reduction of 25 to 30 cents a gallon.
This is the Labor and Energy Show, bringing labor leaders, national experts, and political influencers together to educate you about fancy terms like RINs and RGGI, while explaining the truth about energy independence. Welcome to the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. Part two of with our special guest today, J-Doc. Part one delivered a lot of great information. I'll let you inform our listening audience on who's joining us again here on the Labor and Energy Show.
Absolutely, Joe. I'm ecstatic to have Brian Gitt, author of In the Dark, Fixing Energy Policies That Hurt People and the Planet, back on the program. Okay, we just had him about a month ago. And we, like I said, during that interview, we just touched the tip of the iceberg. And so to remind everybody, Brian Gitt is an environmentalist who started off an environmentalist focused completely on renewables. And of course, he transitioned into an all-of-the-above energy strategy, which, by the way, was not the easiest transition because he was at the forefront of that movement. He's an energy entrepreneur, an investor, developer, and, of course, author. And so, you know, Like I said, his background's interesting because he's long advocated for using only renewables. But after his company raised over $60 million, okay, in the middle of a project that's focus was to make homes and commercial buildings more energy efficient, he came to the realization that focusing exclusively on renewables to meet our energy needs was just a fantasy. And so that's when he chose reality and integrity in coming to the realization of why we need that all of above energy strategy to first and foremost make energy reliable, affordable, and widely available. So a lot of people, Joe, would have taken the money and moved forward. This was Brian's entire life, okay? But instead, he did an about face in the face of money, everything he ever believed in, and the entire community he was a part of, you know, for the benefit of the planet and people. So I'm ecstatic. We're going to talk about his book a lot today and a number of other things that will educate people.
Sounds good, J-Doc. I'll remind our listening audience, if they missed any of today's edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause, and or if you want to go back and listen to part one with Brian Gitt, go to Apple or Spotify, search the Labor and Energy Show. We'll get things moving along. We'll take a short commercial break. J-Doc, stay there. Brian's in the green room. We'll bring him up on the set after the break. This is the Labor and Energy Show with J-Doc and Krause. Back in a moment.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
Navigating group Medicare health plans can be overwhelming. Our friends at Labor First, a division of Retiree First, work with plan sponsors to design and manage Medicare plans for union retirees, keeping costs low without compromising member experience. Retirees can keep their retirement stress-free by calling a dedicated advocate who will guide them through their health plans and answer their questions. Preserve the health benefits that retirees deserve at RetireeFirst.com.
Buying a car is a big decision. Makes, models, colors, cost. But soon enough, the government is going to make that decision for you. Delaware and New Jersey are on a collision course to ban the sale of new gas-powered cars. In 2035, you'll have no choice but to buy an electric vehicle in those states. Tell Governor Carney and Governor Murphy to stop the EV mandate and let drivers decide. This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the Labor Union Community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
Hi, welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show on the Jacob Media Network. I'm ecstatic to bring Brian Gitt back onto the program. Brian, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. You know, we've never brought somebody back this quickly, but after, you know, we talked about the tip of the iceberg and there was so much we left on the table. Okay. Today we're going to talk about your book a lot. Okay. We're going to talk about, you know, obviously we're going to start off with a brief recap of your story. And then we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it a little bit more, because there's so much there that Krause, we felt can educate and benefit the public. So we appreciate you coming back, this soon. And so if you would give our listeners a kind of a quick refresher and a recap of your story. As we previously spoke, you started your career as a green energy entrepreneur. Take time to tell our audience a little bit about, you know, your origin.
Happy to. Yeah, I spent over 20 years of my career focused on promoting energy efficiency and renewable energy and various clean technologies, mostly in California. That's where I live today. That's where I've lived for the last 20 plus years. And I was very involved during the Obama administration, after the financial crisis, so right around 2008, 2009, there was a flood of money. Billions of dollars were flooding in to the states to get people back to work. Obviously, the economy was hit hard. People were out of work. And so the federal government decided that with all the best intentions, obviously, to get people back to work, specifically upgrading homes and businesses and making our built infrastructure more energy efficient. That was kind of the goal. Two-pronged goal, more jobs and more energy efficiency. And obviously, at the same time, trying to promote renewable energy and these other clean technologies. And so we were on the ground floor in really helping to shape and design those programs. We were working with all of the major stakeholders, from the investor-owned utilities like Pacific Gas and Electric and SoCal Edison. We're working with the state of California, the California Energy Commission, the Public Utilities Commission, all of these various folks, as well as all the building trades. We had very close relationships with building trades and local trade associations. And the goal was, how do we get people back to work and how do we make all of this infrastructure more energy efficient? That was the goal.
So you're killing two birds with one stone there, okay? And, you know, in the process, like you talked about, the primary focus was, you know, more energy efficient homes, building more energy efficient homes and commercial buildings, okay? And putting people back to work. And in the process, one of the things, yeah, obviously, we're making a more efficient situation for our environment. Okay, a lot of it was solar, correct?
It was solar as well. I mean, the core of that program was really focused on energy efficiency upgrades. These are things like more efficient heating, more efficient air conditioning, upgrading windows, sealing all the cracks and holes in the homes to make them more energy efficient. There was a bunch of things. And there was new financial tools, new financing products. There was new rebate programs. There was training for contractors. There's a whole spectrum of new financing incentives and educational campaigns to get people to do this stuff.
So you raised like $60 million for your company. Obviously, a lot of great things going on. Things could not really have been going better. Okay. Take it. And this is, you know, a focus on renewables. This is your life. And I'm assuming the community that you're in, you're at the forefront of that. And so I also want to remind people, as an environmentalist, I mean, you were doing tours in Alaska, right? You were climbing the Rockies. You would, you know, take groups of students and, you know, I mean, you know, your life was all about the environment. Okay.
Correct. Yep. Absolutely. The whole reason I got into working in energy and all those programs is because of having those experiences in the wilderness and falling in love with those natural places and wanting to do something very tangible to protect them. So that was a big part of my motivation to work in the energy space and green building and all of those types of programs. And I think what was dismaying is that, you know, we had very high hopes for these programs and there was a lot of money. There's, you know, like I said, billions of dollars from the federal government, state money, local government money was all commingled together to push these programs. The $60 million I was talking about, that was just our consulting firm. That wasn't the whole overarching program. And so there's a lot of money in supporting this. And the hard truth is that these programs did not deliver on their promises. They did not deliver the number of jobs that they had hoped. They did not deliver the amount of energy savings that they had hoped. However, the various stakeholders, mostly the government agencies, continue to spin success stories because, you know, no one wants to look bad, of course, and everyone wants to tell a good story. But I knew because I was on the inside running these programs. We were effectively the general contractor for this. So we were subcontracting out to a whole lot of different parties and managing the rebates and managing the financing programs. So we knew that this wasn't delivering on it. But the story that was getting told was different than the reality on the ground. And this kind of gets to, I think, the most fundamental issue that we're facing today in the energy industry. is that the story that we're being told is false. And what I mean by that.
Before you go any farther, though, I want you to tell us what that was like. In other words, that reality. What were the factors of that reality? Because we've all done a project, and sometimes you guys are there's integrity in the process. Everybody totally believed in this. Your goals were pure. Okay, where's not to love it? You're putting people to work. You're also educating a workforce. Probably when you talk about building trades and all those other elements, you're probably providing new technologies for them to learn, and this is going to be great for everybody. Again, what's not to love? But at what point and what were the factors where you said, oh boy, okay, I get it. You had the realization, the big picture, but tell me when and what factors were, okay, this is not working.
Comes down to money, how much money it costs to do all these things. So what was happening was wealthier homeowners that were going to replace their air conditioning or their heating systems or their windows anyway, took advantage of a lot of these rebates and incentives and government support to do these projects that many of them would have done anyway. And I would say lower to middle income folks, still cost too much to do. Even with the government support, a lot of these whole house retrofits could cost $15,000, $20,000 when you add up all the various interventions. Well, that's a lot of money. And even if you have good rebates, and you're still going to have to come up with some capital to make these projects happen. So what I saw happening is that wealthier people got a lot of the benefit from this money, whereas lower and middle income folks, not to say there was no benefit, but it was very minimal overall. Okay. And it didn't actually trigger a lot of new projects to happen, which is fundamentally what it was supposed to do. It was just free riding. Basically, a lot of these folks, understandably, if I was replacing my heater, I would take advantage of the government rebate if it's there, right? Or a cool new financing program that gave me effectively zero interest or very low interest. So I don't blame the people involved. Everyone had good intentions and everyone was following the incentives. But the bottom line is many of these things did not pay for themselves in a short enough time frame and it took too much upfront capital in the beginning that it boxed out a lot of the lower middle income folks.
So that come the Jesus moment, okay, when you realize that, okay, now you've got to, I'm sure take the lead and bringing everybody together and saying, okay, here's the original plan. Here's what we are seeing. And then there's so much more that comes with that afterwards. But talk about that, getting that crew, the community of individuals and politicians and business leaders together and saying, this isn't working. Okay, here's why. Talk about that. First of all, was it when you came to that, revelation, was that a sleepless night when you actually found out, realized, okay, this is not going to work and somebody has to, break it to everybody? And how did they take it?
Well, it was iterative. It happened over time. It wasn't one event that happened. What would be clear over time is that the various interventions that we were trying or the various programs just weren't delivering. So we'd say, okay, well, let's tweak it. Let's try this then. Let's add that new incentive or we need more training over here. Or so it was a very ongoing iterative process of trying to make the program better in like you should do. That's how you should build anything. You should adapt to what's not working and try to make it work. So it wasn't one come to Jesus moment, as you said. It was just a lot of trying different things. And at the end of the day, some of these people wanted to continue trying. They hold out hope that they will eventually be able to solve for this problem. And I realized that there's just some fundamental physics and economics problems here that are going to be extremely difficult to overcome without a breakthrough, a radical breakthrough, a new technology or a new approach.
Okay, so
this is from our last interview. We never got. Tell us a little bit about the software company you started with, Y Combinator, and what Y Combinator is for folks who don't know.
Sure. Y Combinator is a small venture fund. Basically, they give seed money to startups, and it's also an accelerator. So they bring together a bunch of founders and entrepreneurs for a very concentrated period of time, and they give them all of the insight and support and help that they can to launch their product or launch their company, and then raise money to continue to build some very successful startups, Airbnb, Dropbox, all a bunch of these, Stripe, a bunch of these companies went through Y Combinator. So it's very famous in Silicon Valley for providing that early incubation stage and seed funding to launch these companies. I founded a company called Utility Score, and the aim of that product and of the company was to bring transparency into the true cost of ownership of a home. So when you look at a home, it's not just the mortgage payment, but it would be, well, how much are you going to pay for electricity? How much are you going to pay for natural gas? How much are you going to pay for water? All of the utilities to have a total cost of ownership for that house. And now, obviously, that varies tremendously depending where in the country you are, how many people live in that home, when the home was built, how many upgrades that home has undergone over the years. There's a variety of factors. And we built this massive data set of all of the home characteristics. So we knew the year it was built, how many square feet, the climate zone it was in. So how many days a year they would have to turn on their heater and how many days a year they'd have to turn on their air conditioner. And you know, hundreds and hundreds of assumptions and various data points that we'd bring together to estimate the true cost of ownership of that home. And then we'd give it a score. So you could compare one home to another home in the area. And we were partnering with Zillow Group, who obviously is one of the major portals to access real estate information. We were partnering with solar companies to give them data and tools to showcase without ever going to the house. They could tell a homeowner, well, if you put solar on your roof, you could save X amount of dollars because we already had all of this information about the home. So it was used in different ways, but that was the mission and purpose of Utility Score.
And was it also based on, you know, energy efficiency? Okay, how it would affect, how homes would impact the environment and, you know, what it would take to be, you know, to make a home, you know, more energy efficient?
Absolutely. That was part of the value proposition is we were trying to quantify the value of having a more efficient home or putting solar on your home and then quantifying that value in the real estate market so that we could show homes that had better scores were worth more money in the real estate market. So that was very much a part of the mission of what we were trying to do. And we were helping to try to make these projects happen by showcasing the savings of upgrading your heater, of putting solar in your home, of upgrading your air conditioner, all of those types of projects.
So let's, by the way, what was the status of that? Where is that right now?
We shut it down. It was a nice idea, but it was a nice to have, not a have to have. And what we found was it, even though a lot of people love the idea, including Zillow, they wanted to incorporate it across their various properties, but it wasn't something that was essential for people and they weren't willing to pay enough money for it. So it was not a success. And one of the things, another crack in my views in my belief system really showed up. And one thing I learned from that is because we had all this data, we could see what was happening all across the United States with what people were paying for their energy costs with solar, without solar, all these things. And what we saw, which was quite evident, is that solar didn't make financial sense in many parts of the country, actually most of the country. Of course, it does in some situations. If you live in a larger house in California and you could take advantage of all of those rebates and incentives and you have that many sunny days, then yeah, it makes sense when you have all that support. But most of the country is not like California, right? You don't have the amount of sun. You don't have all those incentives. And what we saw pretty clearly is that solar was being sold on the economic savings value, but it wasn't actually real in most cases.
So having said that, let's talk a little bit about, and we got about 5 minutes to the break, but I would like to get into this, about your PragerU video, Confessions of an Environmentalist. It's fascinating. It's only like 6 minutes long, but you mentioned, a lot of common sense points. In the video, you talk about if we're serious about confronting climate change, protecting the environment, helping people climb out of energy poverty around the world, we need to stop chasing fantasies that only renewables can make it happen. But we need to consider the costs and the benefits of every type, every source of energy. Talk about that. And when you say energy source, if you would lay that out.
Sure. Well, the energy source that is appropriate really depends on the local situation. So if you're in the United States, natural gas and nuclear make a ton of sense. If you're in India, coal makes a lot of sense for the foreseeable future until they can build an economic base up to transition to nuclear power or natural gas or a cleaner burning fuel. So it's really location dependent. That's one thing that we have to, you can't just broad brush and generalize everywhere in the world should do X. You know, I work in the nuclear power industry, right? So I'm very pro nuclear power. But I'm not naive enough to know that nuclear power is the solution everywhere right away, because some places don't have enough economic development to incorporate that technology yet. Eventually they will, but not yet. So that's first. Then you got to look at all these evaluation criteria and weigh them against each other. You got to look at affordability, reliability, how flexible is the technology, how scalable is the technology, what are the emissions of that technology? All of these things need to be balanced. But in our conversation today, everything is just focused on one thing, which is how many CO2 emissions is associated with that particular energy source, which is insane. This is crazy. I mean, you don't do this with anything else. If you're going to your doctor, and your doctor is going to prescribe you some medication because you have some kind of health condition, and you only looked at the negative side effects of that medication, if you read the bottles on some of these things, it's like, you're going to be nauseous. You're going to have stomach pain. You're going to, you might have a risk of a seizure, all of these things. If you just looked at all of those things, you would tell your doctor, forget that. I'm not taking that medicine. Are you insane? But if you balance and you look at, whoa, the benefits of taking this, this penicillin is actually going to solve a bunch of my problems and potentially save my life. Well, then it far outweighs the negative side effects and symptoms of that medication. Well, the same thing is true with energy. That's the kind of approach that we need to take, but we're not doing it. We're myopically focused on one or two metrics and ignoring the benefits of these other energy sources.
So, and that's part of, all of the above energy approach, like you said, wind, solar, oil, coal, natural gas, okay, nuclear, and depending upon, where your geographical location is.
One thing I'd add, though, is that, to a degree in moderation, all of the above. I'm not actually supporting all of the above in all situations. So, for example, solar is fine. It's fine. Solar is like sugar, right? If you have a little bit of sugar, it's fine. It's not going to kill you, right? But if you eat too much sugar, you're going to get diabetes, you're going to become obese, and you're going to get heart disease, right? Well, this, something is similar here with solar power. A little bit of solar is not going to make a big difference. But if you load up the grid with solar and put all of your incentives and policies to basically have the grid majority dominant solar power, well, now you're going to bloat energy costs, you're going to increase the risk of grid instability, and you're going to increase power blackouts. Right? So it's very similar in that sense.
So let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. When I hear you talk, I mean, it always brings up common sense and energy, okay? Not putting all of our eggs in one basket. And I mean, as obvious as the nose on our face. And there's a lot of smart people out there just looking at it from one direction, which is, Twilight Zone-esque, like we say a lot here. We're going to talk a little bit more on this topic. Then we're going to get into the book in the next segment. We'll have more from the Labor and Energy Show and our guest Brian Gitt in just a minute.
What's a Boilermaker? We're the skilled welders, riggers, and craftspeople who will help you grow your competitive edge. We step up when others step back, and we do the job right, on time, on budget, and safely. No drama, just results, every time. We're the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and everything we do begins with our bond. Let's get to work together. Visit bestintrade.com.
Tom Lee Hackey has become part of my morning prayers.
I was a full-time nurse, just lifting up a patient.
A tractor trailer came up behind this, pushed us right through.
Right off the bat, you just felt comfortable. I felt somebody had my back.
He says, I'm going to do everything that I can do for you.
You guys are amazing. I love you.
Call Pond Lahaki Giordano, highly rated Philadelphia workers' compensation attorneys.
Neuter Integrated Multicraft Contractors has been a force since 1896. That's right, 1896. And specializes in welding, piping, mechanical, structural, constructability reviews, project management, and rigging design services. For a free consultation, call Neuter at 314-421-7600. Neuter proudly serves petroleum refining, chemical processing, power generation, and alternative energy. Get in touch with Neuter at 314-421-7600.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are being supported by the members of the labor union community, including Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, business manager, the Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters,
and the United Steelworkers.
Welcome back to the Labor and Energy Show here on the Jacob Media Network. Our guest is Brian Gitt. We have a fantastic conversation going. So much to talk about, never enough time. Brian is the author of In the Dark, Fixing Energy Policies That Hurt People and the Planet. Before we move on and talk about the book, you mentioned in your video from PragerU, Confessions of an Environmentalist, there are five principles to help us protect people and the planet. Would you jump on that, if you will?
Well, I think there's just these fundamental evaluation criteria. This gets to what I was talking about before about medication and how you have to weigh cost and benefits in trade-offs and things. And I think we don't talk enough about, well, how are we evaluating these different energy sources? So cost and affordability, obviously, is one foundational principle. It's got to be affordable. If it's not affordable, then it's non-starter. It's got to be reliable. We got to have 20. You can't run a data center. You can't run a factory. You can't run an industrial site if you have intermittent energy. It has to be 24/7 power, right? So reliability is another core principle. It's got to be low emissions. No one wants to breathe dirty air. No one wants to drink dirty water. We want to reduce our emissions. We want it to be clean, at least to a certain threshold. It's also got to be flexible, right? Our power demand peaks during certain times of the day. We use more and less energy different seasons during the year. We got to be able to grow into this new demand. Like right now, we're seeing a surge in power demand we haven't seen in decades. For the last 20 years in the United States, power demand has been flat. It hasn't been growing at all. And now we're talking about, because of all these new data centers and factories that are coming online, data centers alone are going to triple the power use just by 2030, depending on the consulting firm analysis you look at. So we're going to be using a lot more power. So you got to be scalable and flexible in terms of how you meet that demand. So there's a whole number of foundational principles. But I think there's, you know, one thing that really illustrates a lot of this kind of false information is people's knowledge is just very superficial on these topics. And one of the things I use an example of is electric vehicles in oil use, right? People think, well, if you drive electric cars, you're going to reduce oil demand. But that's actually not true. If every car in the United States were electric tomorrow, oil demand would likely increase. And I know that sounds crazy. Like you're saying, what are you talking about, Brian? But people don't understand how all of this works together. So oil obviously plays a critical role because 97% of all global transportation, whether it's trucks, trains, planes, ships, all comes from oil, right?
One of the things you talked about was land use, okay? Along the lines of what you're talking about with EVs and understanding, especially when it comes to wind, okay, when we talk about land use. And that's another one of those areas where it's actually mind-boggling when you talk about a nuclear plant, power plant, okay, and the land use for that, okay. You talk about, the solar farm needing 75 times more land than a nuclear power plant, which is, I believe, a 1 square mile.
Let me give you an example on that, on land use, since you brought it up. So recently, just about a month or so ago, the largest solar project in the world just came online in China. It's a 5 gigawatt plant. Now, a gigawatt, for each gigawatt, it's about, depending on the home, but it's somewhere around 750,000 U.S. homes would be the equivalent amount of energy in a gigawatt. So it's a lot, right? For each one. Now, we're talking about 5 gigawatts of power. That solar project in China took up 200,000 acres of land. I'm going to say that again, just to let that, it's hard to even visualize, 200,000 acres. Now, in that power is not 24/7 power, right? It's only when the sun's out, obviously. Now, if you were to do the same amount of power capacity with advanced nuclear, with these newer designs, these modern designs that are being going to be deployed in the United States here soon, the same footprint of land would be 200 acres. 200 acres versus 200,000 acres. That is how efficient and shrinks the environmental footprint. So when we talk about the environment, we got to talk about materials use. We got to talk about land use. All of these things have a massive environmental impact. So the more efficient and power dense a technology is, the more environmentally beneficial it is.
Well, you talk about the more land we need to produce energy, the more wildlife habitat we lose. Okay. You talk about, trees and obviously dealing with our natural resources that help us, obviously deal with emissions. This is just another example. And we'll talk about, if we get to EVs, the fact that people, the information you're providing is so not only just awesome, but common sense. What do people say that are professionals in the industry when you bring these points up? These are not political points. These are just facts. What response, and why aren't, extreme far left environmentalists, okay, what are they saying when you educate them on these points?
Well, this is part of the challenge, is that facts actually don't convince people to change their minds. I mean, we know this in advertising. It's, you have to tell a different story. And right now, the story in the world and in the U.S. is fossil fuels are bad and they're destroying the planet, and solar, wind, and electric vehicles are the only thing that can save it. That is the story that is embedded and inculcated into people. And so I can throw 1,000 facts at them, but they're not going to hear me, and they're not going to alter their perspective just with facts. So you have to really show and tell a better story, and in relate it to things on emotional level. Like, that's why I was using the example of the doctor in the prescriptions. And when you would look at, if you just looked at all the symptoms and side effects, because that's so obvious, like no one wants that. A good example of this that happened in the United States is in the 90s. You remember the fat-free craze with Snackwells and Intamins, fat-free ice cream, fat-free coffee cake, fat-free cookies, all of that craze? Well, a big part of that, the part of that story and that narrative came out of the U.S. government. The U.S. government had a food pyramid. You remember that food pyramid? And it came out in 1992. And basically, it had a bunch of processed grains and things at the bottom that says you should eat the most of. And then as you went up the pyramid, it says you don't eat fat stuff. So don't eat nuts, don't eat whole milk, don't eat butter, all of these things. Don't even eat avocados, things that have higher in fat. Don't eat meat. So that narrative had a massive impact on human health. The obesity rates, the heart disease, the overall level of diabetes skyrocketed in the U.S. And people thought they were eating healthy when they were eating Snackwell's cookies that are fat-free. Well, obviously, that's a false story. That's not.
By the way, I gained 20 pounds during that craze you're talking about.
I did the same thing. I love those snack ball cookies. But it shows you the power of story, though. And it shows you, especially when the government and people in authority, there was Harvard medical studies that were supporting this position. So the only way to change, and did you realize that the USDA doesn't promote that food pyramid anymore, by the way? It's gone. They have this thing called MyPlate. Who's ever heard of MyPlate? I've never heard of it. I mean, until I was looking at researching this. So this is really important because this is foundational to what's happening in energy right now. We're doing the same thing we did with food. And unfortunately, when instead of everyone thinking they're getting healthy, eating fat-free cookies, that's a similar thing we're doing with renewable energy, electric vehicles, and all this stuff. We're telling people one thing, but it's actually making our energy system sick. And this is our life support system.
Oh, right? That's right.
See, I mean, this is no joke. Just like your health is your life support system, our energy grid, our power system, all our pipelines and transportation networks, this is our life support system.
And, you know, on the show, I mean, we're legislating ourselves out of options, though. With the cookies, you know, eventually the food manufacturer, like, they didn't take the other stuff off the shelf. You could still eat whatever you wanted. But that was the narrative back then. And so it's such a great point. We have 10 minutes. I want to get into the book. Okay. I mean, you know, there's so much here. First of all, you know, In the Dark, Fixing Energy Policies That Hurt People on the Planet. What is the core thesis of the book?
The core thesis is we need to use more energy. And when I say more energy, 250% more energy. I think there's this idea out there that more energy is bad. More energy is harmful to the environment. But it is absolutely clearly not backed up by facts and data. When you look at not only in the United States, just look in the US, our air pollution has dramatically decreased over the last few decades. As our per capita energy use goes up, we can afford pollution controls, better technology, more efficient ways of making energy, of using energy. We can afford to retrofit our old power plants, or we can afford to move from coal to natural gas. So all of these things need energy. So the first and fundamental misconception that people have is that more energy hurts the environment, when it's just the opposite. And you see this in developing world for sure. So all around the world, when you look at the per capita energy use, the less energy they use, the more they cut down their forests because they need that wood for cooking and for heating their homes, and it's very inefficient. Or the more pollution they have in terms of runoffs in their rivers. So that's one fundamental principle that people have absolutely 180 degrees backward.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, now that's not to say that all energy is the same, because it's clearly not. And we do want to move to cleaner burning sources of power and energy use and efficiency over time. And we are naturally. Everywhere in the world that gets wealthier gets cleaner environment. I mean, it's just there's not a single example that I would challenge anyone to point out a place in the world that is continuing to get wealthier and use more energy where the environment is getting considerably worse. Now, that doesn't mean there's not problems and trade-offs, right? Or that we didn't do things wrong. Like in the 70s, we were dumping chemicals in rivers, but we corrected for that, right? So there are obviously things that can go wrong, but in the overarching arc of time, the more energy we use, the cleaner environment we're going to have. So that's one foundational principle that I think is really backwards. There's a couple more that I think have really permeated the minds. Another one that's a false story is nuclear power is dangerous and is a real threat to the community. Well, there's no data to back this up. I mean, when you look at 70 years of commercial operation of the nuclear power industry, let's take the U.S. as an example. There's been one accident. No one got hurt, much less killed. No one got hurt. There was no negative health effect of that Three Mile Island plant release.
That's the big reference. That's where the narrative starts.
People will point to Fukushima, which no one died from radiation there. According to official stats from Japan, one person but he had lung cancer and he was a smoker. But there now, these are, I'm not trying to minimize accidents. We don't want to have accidents. Every industry has accidents, though, right? But the reality is that people have equated nuclear power as this very, very severely dangerous technology when the data doesn't support it.
So I want to spitfire a little. The damage assumption. Walk us through what that is and why it's a problem.
Well, that gets back to this more energy idea. So the damage assumption is that most people assume that the more energy we use, the more damage we do to the environment. And I make the point that it's actually just the opposite. Whether you're talking about the developing world and not cutting down forests for various wood to heat and cook with. Now, a great example of this is in the Haiti in the Dominican Republic. There's a great photo of this where you look at the border between these two countries, and Haiti relies on wood for cooking and home heating. And all the forests are chopped down. Imagine a big clear-cut forest. Basically, there's just no trees because everyone's cutting down every last tree. Right across the border in the Dominican Republic, they mostly use liquefied petroleum gas. And they use more fossil fuels, and their energy usage of fossil fuels per capita is much higher. And you have this lush green forest because they're not cutting down all their trees to cook with or to heat their homes. So this is an example that's counter to the narrative. People think fossil fuels are bad. Fossil fuels are killing the environment. Well, actually, fossil fuels are protecting the forests, right? Because they're protecting them from getting cut down to cook with using that wood to cook and heat the homes. So there's tons of examples like this where people misunderstand, and that's what the damage assumption is, that people assume the more energy you use, the more damage you do, when in fact, it's just the opposite.
So I'm just going to touch on a couple of the chapters. Chapter 7, security. A touch on that, if you would, for our listeners.
Energy security is paramount. Obviously, we don't have a country if we don't have energy. Energy security is national security. In World War II, that was won or lost by the amount of oil and the amount of energy that the U.S. allies gave the allies. So the same thing is true today. We cannot sacrifice our national security by relying on adversarial countries for core technologies to produce our electricity and to power our vehicles, et cetera. So this is, China is an adversarial country. Right. I wouldn't call them an enemy, but they're adversarial. They're certainly not our friends. Well, they dominate the supply chains for solar panels, wind turbines, and electric vehicles. Depending on which mineral you're talking about or which processing part of the supply chain, they have an absolute chokehold on that. So for us to outsource our energy security to China is ridiculous. It is reckless and it is dangerous, especially when the United States is the largest producer of energy, of oil and gas in the world. We're also the largest producer of nuclear energy in the world, right? So why in the world, when we have all of this nuclear infrastructure and we can build more, we have all of this oil and gas and we can continue to extract it in a clean way and in a responsible manner, why would we bet our national security on getting our supply chain of core energy technologies from an adversarial country? That is a significant risk factor for us.
You have so many fantastic chapters in this book. Where do we go from here? Chapter 16. Okay, before we end this interview, and I'd like to touch on it right now, talk about that in the face of everything we're talking about. Talk about chapter 16.
Yeah, I mean, we have to change the story first and foremost. We got to promote policies that are common sense and make sense. So part of that is debunking a lot of these myths, right? That if the goal is reducing emissions, then we should be choosing the technologies and approach that truly yield that result. And in the United States, which is used in the book as an example, the number one thing that has reduced emissions in the United States is actually natural gas. It is that transition from coal to natural gas. So why aren't we doing more of that before? Why are we trying to shut down all of our, prevent new natural gas plants from being built? That doesn't make any sense. Solar only contributed less than 10% of the emission savings. So we have to be use common sense on this stuff. The goal is not to promote one technology or another. I'm agnostic. I don't care what technology we use. Right. All we should care about is how do we reduce the emissions in the most efficient way? How do we use the least amount of land, use the least amount of materials, and do it for the best low cost possible? That's what we should care about. And so it's what the book tries to do is gives a framework. It lays out evaluation criteria that we can evaluate various policies and various technologies against. So when we have these policies that say we're going to be 100% renewables by 2040 or 2045, which New York, California, these kind of states do, we can say, well, what evaluation criteria are you using for that? And really dissecting that and seeing how that makes no sense. So go on.
Well, we got about a minute left. Again, this is ridiculous. I mean, I feel like it's a 5 minute. We're going through things so fast. It's been the fastest hour. What I'd love to say about the book is what you've done incredibly well is you've created a book in layman's terms so people can understand it. Okay, it's not a lot of technical reading. Joe Krause and I and with the broadcast have always tried to put, you know, kind of like we said on the last show, create a situation where we're able to translate some of the technical language and all those things. Before we go, Brian, how can people find the book?
The best place to go is just my website, briangitt.com, briangitt.com. They can read it for free online. I give the electronic version away for free. The paper version it costs. We make no money on this book. I'm basically doing it because I'm very passionate about this, and I think more people need to understand it. And like you said, I tried to condense. I wanted people to read this in about an hour or two in a weekend. It's very light, but it's very packed. It's very dense in terms of the content. But it was designed to be in layperson's terms. You can read it in an hour or two, and you're not going to have to invest 5 or 10 hours in reading something, right? So go to briangitt.com is the best place to get it.
Awesome. Listen, Brian, I want to thank you so much for doing part two so soon on the broadcast. Obviously, we really appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Gitt, the author of In the Dark, Fixing Energy Policies That Hurt People and the Planet. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
It's our pleasure. We'll have more from the Labor and Energy Show in just a minute.
The Eastern Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters is proud to present skilled union workers, including the workers that build and maintain our energy infrastructure. The safest, best trained, and most productive carpenters in the country are on the job. Whether it's energy from nuclear, wind, coal, natural gas, or offshore wind, the EAS carpenters are ready to provide the construction need of an energy industry our families depend on. If you're interested in a job in construction, visit EASCarpenters.org or follow us on social at EAS Carpenters.
Neuter Integrated Multicraft Contractors has been a force since 1896. That's right, 1896. And specializes in welding, piping, mechanical, structural, constructability reviews, project management, and rigging design services. For a free consultation, call Neuter at 314-421-7600. Neuter proudly serves petroleum refining, chemical processing, power generation, and alternative energy. Get in touch with Neuter at 314-421-7600.
Can you afford a brand new electric car or a charging station for your home? Want to spend your days waiting in line at a public charging station? Well, buckle up. Delaware and New Jersey are planning to ban the sale of gas-powered cars by 2035. Most drivers can't afford it, don't need it, and don't want it. Tell Governor Carney and Governor Murphy to stop the EV mandate and let drivers decide.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. Today's program is pre-recorded.
Portions of tonight's Labor and Energy Special are presented by PBF Energy and supported by members of the Labor Union Community, a collaborative to educate the public and change the narrative.
I'm back here on the Labor and Energy Show with Jay Dock and Krause. I already sent briangitt.com over to my brother-in-law, who will enjoy that 60 to 120 minute read, Jay Dock. Really good stuff. And I thought what you said at the very end was spot on. The ability to be able to understand in terms that we understand helps educate us and make us it makes the topic more understandable for everyone.
Absolutely, Joe. And there's so much synergy between what Brian's doing and what our show is about. OK, common sense and energy. Brian, he actually says, I'm in the nuclear industry, and he makes it clear. So obviously he supports that, but he doesn't have a preference, like he said at the end there. You know, he wants to do what's right for the environment, for our energy security, for our needs. OK, and one of the things that was amazing was when I asked him, what do you say to people with the information? You and I are sitting here listening, like you always say, as listeners and as members of the general public. We're just taking in information and trying to be educated, okay? This is not a special interest or a political show. This is about the common sense. And Brian said, well, you know, they aren't listening. People who, you know, like, you have to tell a different story. And he certainly is. And we're ecstatic to have him on the broadcast.
No doubt about that. BrianGitt.com. Git is G-I-T-T. So BrianGitt.com. And as Brian mentioned, you can read the book without an expense, no charge, and you will enjoy, or you will at least become more educated about the topic. That's going to do it for this edition of the Labor and Energy Show with J. Doc and Krause. We're glad that we were able to bring part two of our conversation, or J. Doc's one-on-one with Brian Gitt, as we move into what is the back half now of 2024, J. Doc, especially going up and working our way towards the election cycle. The information that we provide will be critical in terms of people being able to be educated. 30 seconds. I'll give it all to you before I say goodbye.
It's a great point. And I think that, if people just listen like we are, OK, we don't have it. Listen, Brian is as much an environmentalist as he's ever been. He just has a different approach and reality. You're talking about a guy who gave up, money and. All kinds of, businesses based, because of his principles and what he learned. So if we listen and we're objective and we care about our planet and we care about reality and we come to the same conclusion, okay, we can do something about this right now. But like you talk about the political season, Joe, okay, the difference between cookies and the health craze in the 90s and energy is we're legislating ourselves out of the ability to make changes once we do them. So I hope people are listening and they get educated on the facts.
You go to Apple or Spotify, search the Labor and Energy Show, and you'll get a library or a catalog of all of our broadcasts as we continue on. On behalf of all of our listeners, on behalf, of course, of J-Doc, I'm Joe Krause, and on behalf of Kateri, who's producing Behind the Glass today, see you next time, everybody.
Thanks for listening to tonight's Labor and Energy Special. You can help. Call your congressperson and join the movement to push back on RINs.
This program is paid for by Advocacy United. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Advocacy United or its guests and do not reflect the views of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program is pre-recorded.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.